Maybe my home's on the road. The road's the only place I feel at home. I don't know if I'm ever gonna get back again this way. The road's the only place I feel at home. Feel at home.
Hello and welcome to the My Home is on the Road show. My name is Dave Manning. This is the show that comes to you each week from the back of a Volkswagen microbus. This week, parked once again down by beautiful and idyllic Oak Creek outside Sedona, Arizona. Last week, we brought you part one of a couple shows from down here around the campfire by Oak Creek, where we met Mark and Jude, a young couple from New Hampshire, who were living a largely normal life. Mark was enrolled in nursing school, and then a series of events kind of just led them to examine their lives and really just say, you know what, just F it. We are going to go on the road. And they did. About 4 months ago or so, they took off on the road and haven't looked back, but having the time of their lives. Been really getting into the way the road just provides as you go along. And so last week we heard a bit of a conversation with them, and this week we're going to continue hearing that conversation.
The road's the only place I'm feeling.
And we're going to pick up just where the conversation turned to the subject of Mark. And Mark was not at the campfire the night I made the recordings, but Mark is a middle-aged man, and he's camped down at what's called Spider Point. And Spider Point is the very end of the rutty dirt road that we're all camped down on this kind of unpopulated stretch of Oak Creek, which is a mountain stream that flows out of the mountains near Flagstaff, Arizona, and then down through the deserts near Sedona. The words Spider Point are neatly carved in all capital letters into the huge, spreading, gray-barked willow tree that shades the whole area. Mark was a welder. He built nuclear submarines. The submarines that helped defend this country, and defend it still even as we speak. In the process, he got asbestos, a deadly carcinogen, lodged in his lungs. Now, years later, he has debilitating chronic emphysema. He has trouble walking, and he's only projected to live another 2 years or so. In the meantime, we the people of the United States, we the people of the United States of America, refuse to give him any help. Even with the aid of a lawyer, his case just keeps getting postponed.
Well, my home's on the road. The road's the only place I feel home.
In his sing-song southern drawl, he explained the night before around the fire. Well, the Social Security people, they send me a letter saying, whoops, our bad, we need this such-and-such letter signed, and it'll be another 18 months or so until you're hearing to see if you get benefits. Then it's like, whoops, our bad, we misplaced such-and-such a letter, it'll be another 12 months before you're hearing. Meanwhile, I'm only projected to live another 2 years. It's obvious they're just waiting for me to die. My lawyer said, have you ever been diagnosed with a psychological disorder? I told him no. He said, well, that would help. So what am I supposed to do? Should I show up at the hospital emergency room saying I'm afraid I'm going to hurt myself, or better yet, afraid I'm going to hurt someone else? I mean, they're just waiting for me to die. If they had any balls, they'd just do like the Nazis did and just shoot me in a ditch somewhere. I mean, I've never been a criminal. If you'd have told me 30 years ago that this had happened, I would have told you you were full of it. And then that ranger comes down here on Saturday just to ask me if I have a fishing license. Mark keeps Spider Point immaculately clean. He sleeps in a small Walmart tent and fishes in Oak Creek while he waits to die. Our government, our freely elected government, our representatives have made this so. His sister even contacted their congressman. A pat answer, going nowhere, was the only reply. Mark's life is in all of our hands, and we, the people of the United States of America, have chosen to wait for him to die. And we've refused to give him one red cent while he does it.
Like, I feel so bad for that guy, Mark, you know, this Social Security and everything.
Yeah.
Like, and seriously, like, the government doesn't give a fuck, though. They don't give a fuck. Yeah, he's out here dying, dude.
Dude, they really so don't crazy. Care.
And it's all not. About money.
His sister is giving him, like, I brought him to Walmart. He's, like, all excited to go to Walmart. He spent, like, $20. Got, like, some sugar and some oil. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, his sister is just, like, giving him, like, $100 there and $100 there to survive. And that's all he has.
Yeah. That's crazy, man.
And he's...
And he's making it happen.
The chemo's got him all fucked up. He can't feel his feet at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, neuropathy.
He barely feel his legs from the knee down.
And yeah, that's a man who genuinely served his country and worked hard for something that he was promised.
Yeah, dude, he's worked hard. He's worked hard.
That's
up. He's done a lot of shit. He's making money, too, like, in the past, just working really hard. And now they're just... His, and he paid a lot of taxes, and they just...
fuck him. It sucks, dude. It's so fucked up. And it's like we can sit here and know how unjust it is, but the thing is we can't do a damn thing about it.
Yeah, I know.
And that's the shittiest feeling in the world, man. Because it's like, I wish, you know, you can't give him what he needs right now. You know, I can't give him life. I can't give him, you know, I can't take away, you know, what his affliction or whatever. And that's just a shitty feeling.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I don't understand how a man can be dying and literally, like, no, you just fucking turn a blind, how do you turn a blind eye to that? What, because you wear a suit and you're part of a collective group that wants to fuck somebody, so you think it's okay because you're not an individual?
No, they're not thinking, they're not moralizing, they don't give a fuck about morals.
Right.
They don't give a shit, dude, they are evil.
Careful.
Yeah, the people at the very top, there's people all in between, but the people at the very top, that are really pulling strings do not care at all.
And what's so sad is it's cliche. Like, he told us the whole story how, like, he used to work on the nuclear submarines as a welder, and then he got asbestos poisoning in his lungs, and now, you know, like, he's got projected, like, 5 years to live, and the government just keeps on being like, yeah, oh, we'll tell you what, we're just going to take another 18 months to review your case.
3 years.
Like, is it that hard to be like, hey, he worked here, he got asbestos poisoning like 15 other guys that work there.
After and, 30 years of service.
And, yeah, and what does he need for medical treatment? Boom. Like, you need 18 months to review that? No, you don't. Like, it's like you said. He's,
they could give him some money, maybe they're like just, $200 a month or something.
Yeah. How about if they just give him $200 a month? Yeah.
Instead of spending like $100 million to repair some potholes in a highway.
Yeah. And how much are they paying the people that just sit around and deny them benefits, you know?
Yeah, or the people that sit around and fucking make these highways that drag out for years and years and quadruple, if not tenfold, on their expense and their expected costs when all the contractors pocket most of the money.
Yeah, just like skim some more off
people,
the system.
Yeah, clearly these people are just pocketing money to do nothing. Just manipulation of taxpayers' money and just... And it's like, what are we going to do, though? We're not going to do anything. We're just going to sit here and bitch about it, you know? It's like, that's what everybody does. Everybody complains about their jobs and their benefits and their health insurance and their health care and their 401k. And it's like, fuck it. So why don't you all walk away from it and not partake in it? And then what happens? What happens to a system that has no participants? It collapses. It fails.
They get all roped into it, dude.
Right, because of the intricacies of the way it's been established.
Neck deep in that shit.
Yep. Your mortgage payment, you got to work three jobs, and then your family disintegrates because
and they can't
a lot
live out here.
And, yep,
because the park rangers right. come.
Right. Because you need to live in a house where you pay a mortgage and you're trapped.
Right.
Like it's all interconnected. So yeah, I mean they got you down.
So it's awareness. It's a process with awareness, and then soon. Really, it's gonna be really. I think it's gonna be really soon. Yeah, you guys see too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
people can't pretend. People like
people are waking up all over, and then they're just gonna be like, "What the? Dude, what is going on?"
Yeah. When people start leaving those credit card buildings, and they start leaving all these fucking skyscrapers, and just wake the fuck up. I mean, because seriously, you look at it, it's the same. Thing. You got your corporate office job, you go home to your wife with dinner on the table, You don't even really want to be there. You're miserable anyways because you got to get up to your alarm clock at 6 o'clock, smash this thing over the top, drag yourself to a cold shower, get yourself into rush hour traffic, get your 350 Starbucks coffee to sit in the office and pass
and none of it makes sense. Funny. The economics doesn't make sense. The impact on
just
the
earth. An ant.
Absolutely nothing about the system makes any sense.
No, really, if you want to look at the whole economic system anyways, mostly you're just taking away from the earth's resources and you're just doing it in a selfish manner. I mean, we're just fucking depleting.
And it's not so it's not wasteful. Productive in an economic standpoint anyways, tearing itself into the ground.
It's
right
just a, it's just an people trying to amass. I don't know. It's really just people running around in a lot of confusion. That's what how I view it. You know what I mean? And again, I'm young, but I know what's what. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I do. We've all seen it. We've lived it. And it's like, maybe people are just becoming, I don't know. I just, do you know what I mean? I mean, and it's like, are we just all very, you know, just downers and we're like, the system? No, because like I was really close to my RN degree. I did the whole paying rent in my apartment and I had a car and paid insurance and taxes and did all. I've done that. You know, I didn't do it for 20 years because I didn't want to fucking waste 20 years of my life. You know, but, yeah, I mean, I could go play the game and fit in the system if I wanted to. Smoke myself stupid every day to get by because it's ridiculous. That's what people do. They get their habit to get by. They're not living like they want to. But are we all just really cynical? I don't think so, though. I don't. Because I'm a pretty positive person. I don't know.
So where do you see yourself going from here?
Me?
Yeah. Or you guys both?
I mean, we're going to the Hopi, and I try to do is I go with the flow of everything.
Yeah, we don't ever, ever, ever make, like, future plans.
And that's not to say as though, oh, well, we don't really know what we're doing, so we're just going to see what happens. You know what I mean? That's careless. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but since we've stopped making plans,
right, things just come into our path. You know what I mean? Like, we had to leave here, like I told you, we have to leave Saturday, right? I was like, all right, well, we'll just, you know, mosey around for a few days before we go to the Hopi. You know, Chris came over to our camp and he said,
now we have a
place to stay in for 3 days. And I didn't, what did we do? I did nothing. You know what I mean? It just worked out. So then we're going to go to the Hopi. We're going to stay with the chief's daughter for as long as we want. I mean, we could live up there if we wanted to. For as long as we wanted to, and partake in the harvesting and the planning, and just work with the community. You know, that's how they work. It's a traditional village. They do not tie into the Western civilization materialism. I mean, they've completely stayed away from that. Some of them, of the Hopi, have gone with the white man's ways, and they're progressives. You know, they run the casinos, and they're alcoholics, and not all of them, I mean, but that's how a lot of Native people have gone. I mean, they're people just like me and you. Some stay true, and some don't. So it's no great utopia up there, but where we're going is all just the traditional and the spiritual elders that have been around on that in their reservation their whole lives. But it's cool because they even got to go to the UN. I mean, they went to the UN to represent themselves, and like it was quite an impact in like '92 or something. And went to New York, but after that, I mean, I know we're probably going to go to India at some point. And then, I don't know, I mean, we're renting a house here for the winter in Cottonwood or Sedona. I had no idea, it just worked out kind of like that. You know what I mean? So I guess I'll kind of just go with the flow. I guess that's the best answer I can give.
And what would you say to somebody that is in the office job?
You can't, you know... I don't know. I mean, it's tough. It's really tough because sometimes there are a lot of people, like we run into a lot of people sometimes that are kind of like straight and narrow and kind of, you know, in their routine or whatever. And a lot of them say, you know, oh, I wish I could do what you do. And, you know, your response is you can. It's just a choice. You know what I mean? It's a big choice. It's a hard choice. It's letting go of everything you're comfortable with. But it sets you free.
When you're not worrying about the future and you don't have any expectations, and nothing ever goes wrong because
right,
you're not expecting anything, so how can it go wrong?
Right.
You
know? And again, that perfect example is when you were around and we had no gas and no money, and you know, and sure enough, now we're all set for now, you know what I mean? for a while. I mean, this lady just came across our path, and it wasn't just some ordinary lady. I mean, this is, I mean, she's really, really nice, and she really, really knows what's up. I mean, she's wealthy, but I mean, yeah.
I think
didn't
we learned
we tell
a lot
you
from
about
her
this?
Too.
You know? Yeah, well, yeah, you were talking a bit about it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's wealthy or whatever, but
you know
she's
what I mean?
Really
I
down
think,
to earth.
I think we learned a lot
yeah.
from her.
I think so, too. And, I don't know, just things have a way of working out like that. Even that guy I worked for doing some landscaping in Cottonwood for, like, 2 days, I think I worked for him. Even that guy, I think, you know, I got something from his presence and he got something from my presence. You know, I told him what I was doing and... And, you know, I worked my ass off for him. I worked very hard, very polite, you know, very respectful, just as I try to do with anything and with everybody I come across. And he just opened up to me and told me a little bit about himself. And, you know, that's what I mean. It's just, it's all good. It's always good. And, you know, as long as you keep that mindset and, you know, that positive outlook and you just keep putting it out there, those things just come back. And if you start getting down and start putting out negative things and think that things aren't working for you, they're not going to work for you. And then it's just once you change that mindset, it's like you, again, you're that energy that's all around you and all that is. So it's just going to, you know, it acts as a catalyst, and, you know, the way it carries and affects everybody, even if it's very subtly, you can't notice.
Every time you meet somebody, though, it's always a reason and you always exchange something,
yeah.
energy.
Yeah, just a presence. I mean, you carry so much in your presence that you don't even realize. And just by being somewhere, you don't even have to speak. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
Especially, like, even when you were just saying about how you think about all that and, like, communities coming together and, like, what happens if neighborhoods had something like this. You know what I mean? Just, like, that thought process, that idea. I mean, that's you coming to that by yourself, yet that's what, you know, secretly, unspokenly, everybody's kind of thinking the same thing. You know what I mean? I always use the, you know, when you put your head down in your pillow at night, that's kind of like a very private thing. You know what I mean? You kind of run through your thoughts of the day. You're like, what happened today? What do I expect? You know, what do I want to do these next few days? Like, is it right on track? You know, am I comfortable and content with it? You know, you get these ideas and you're like, oh shit, you know, maybe I shouldn't have, you know, done this to that person today, or maybe I should have handled this a little differently. There's a lot of reflection, and you come to a lot of conclusions that everybody else is coming to the same conclusions. You just, they're things that you don't really talk about. You know, you kind of keep them inside. But I think by sharing those and opening them up to other people and letting, you know, just conversing with other people that you do have these deep feelings and emotions, and that it is okay to converse and convey them, that you become more comfortable and aware of them. You know what I mean? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm kind of rambling. I'll stop, but...
No,
I always apologize.
I know, and I can't help it, though. Because I don't...
Well, what I think is, like, really wrong with our society right now is we have a... You know, a news system and a journalism system and a media system that is based on profit, and they make a lot of money if they can make problems, if they can divide us.
Yeah.
Then they make way more money if they can say, hey, look at this issue. Hey, look, there's like the pro for this and there's the con for this, and people are divided about it, blah, blah, blah. And so, like, you know, we think like, oh, are you a liberal? Or are you a conservative? And it's really like, you know, if the most liberal person you know sits down and has dinner with the most conservative person you know, they agree on 95% of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, because we all really kind of want the same things, but they want us to think that we are like enemies, you know? Because then they can create, you know, this tension, and they create a good storyline, and that's what they make their money off.
You don't know these other people, supposedly, personally, you know, because it's just a collective group. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, I mean, what happens if you sat down all these Democrats and took the Senate, and you just sat them all down, you know what I mean, to intimately get to know each other, as opposed to just these formal, like, f***ing sessions that are boring and routine as hell. What happens if you know, I don't know. That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you know, we'd agree on 95% of stuff. It's just me. And most stuff, we'd be like, hey, you know, we all want the same thing. We all want to, like, live in peace, and maybe we want to get married, maybe we want to have kids, or maybe we don't. But, you know, we want to, like, see, like, yeah, you know what, if I make some money, I could buy a chunk of land and grow some food and and, you know, live in peace. You know, that's what everybody wants.
Right.
But, you know, they like to make us think that, you know, there's this big division between us. But really, if we sat down, like, hey, we kind of all want the same thing. It's just, you know, people have different visions about how to get there.
Right.
Like, hey, should we make this legal and that illegal or something? Like, you know, it's just, but it's mostly just, say, how, what path do you want to take to get to the same goal?
Yeah. That's kind of what we're all doing anyways. Like, we're all, you know, kind of, you know what I said? I say, like, I wrote this line that we're a group, we're just a group of collective souls amidst a ride through time and consciousness. So, careful, you're on coals.
Yeah.
Okay. That, you know, we're all just trying to do what we think is right, and we think we're kind of separate, but really we're all going to the same place. We're just taking our own path to get there. You know what I mean?
I kind of want to crawl in and just lay down.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
I looked into a lot of the Tibetan and Buddhist beliefs, and they coincide so perfectly with the Hopi. Even to, there was this one prophecy of the Hopi where a windless ship would come to take those traditionalists who have stayed true to the path and true to the way of life, where they would be, you know, removed to something better, you know, that they were waiting for or whatever. I mean, I don't know perfectly, but and then I looked up something in context to the Tibetans and the Buddhist point of view on that aspect, and they also said something about wingless ships. You know, these life forms from other planets, and it makes me feel like such an ass to be like, yeah, dude, fucking aliens are gonna come, and like, you know what though? We're just one fucking planet in such a vast universe that we can't even fathom with a conscious mind, with a human mind. So it's like, and who's to say that we're on this little tiny planet to trades in the stock market and pay off our mortgage and get, you know, memberships at country clubs? That's not why we're here. We're really just distracting ourselves and making ourselves comfortable because we fear the unknown and what's uncomfortable. But the moment you step outside that comfort box and put yourself, you know, where you feel uncomfortable and unsafe and it's unknown, that's where you learn the most.
You know, when I start freaking out is when I feel like I'm locked into something.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, as soon as I feel like I'm leaving or changing, I feel so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too.
Because it's like, it's different. You don't know exactly what's going to happen, but you're really excited for it.
And it's just like, this is not like a permanent thing.
Yeah.
Which it never is. So it's kind of a false perspective that I hold sometimes.
Wow. Yeah. That would be like the working definition of the traveling bone. You know, we're like, you like, because some people are born with just that traveling bone, man. We're like, you know, and some people are fine. They're like, hey, you know what? At like 18, I got married. I got this job. I'm going to work this job until I retire. And they're great with that. And like, it's like, cool, more power to you, man.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you're fine with that. You got a path and you're like on the steady path and that's great. But then there's, people like us that they're just like, you're someplace and you're just like, you know, there's someplace else.
Right.
Yeah, there always is.
I gotta go see what that's like.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But you find, you always find the same things, and that is, you know, peace and contentness and good conversation and people that you can share some pretty, you know, deep unspoken feelings and beliefs of all that is. You know, even if you leave the next day and, you know, you never see each other again, you, it's really strong. It's really strong, and it's strong for a reason, because it's what's real, you know?
Well, yeah, it's reality. That's the thing. It's like people, like, they live in a house, or they get married, and so they think they're like, cool, I got control of my world, you know,
right.
Because I'm going to live in the same place. I'm going to live in the house. That's going to change. I'm going to be married to this person. That's going to change. But it's like, but when you're living on the road, you realize, like, everything changes every day.
Yeah.
And, like, you might be in a relationship with somebody, but you know, you always kind of know it's always in flux and it'll always go away at any moment. And that's actually the real reality. When you live in a house and you live in the same house for a long time, or you're with the same person for a long time, like, you have this fake sense of like, oh, well, yeah, I'm forever, or like, it's steady. It's like, well, but that stuff can go away at any moment. And like, but when you're on the road, like that's like in your face all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so you everything grow, you have can right. go away.
But you grow comfortable with that, and you know, And it drives you. It's an excitement. You know, it's something to have something new and stimulating. It's something that you can learn from and take from every single day. Every single day, not knowing what's going to happen. You know, I woke up one day, you know, and then, you know, we were at a Native Indian ceremony that night, and I walked through this smudging process where they, like, purify you with, like, sage or whatever, and you walk through the smoke. I walked through the smoke, and the wind picked up and f***ing got me from head to toe, like, perfectly or something. And this guy was like, oh, whoa, you know what I mean? And, like, I don't know. It's just, like, all kinds of weird shit like that. It's, you know what I mean? I didn't know that. And then I went to, like, the Sufi, you know, I was telling you about that Sufism or the branch of mystic Muslim or whatever, and just went to go try it out and, you know, just check it out. And then and it's just like, you never know, man. You never know.
I think that's what enlightenment would be. It would be everything new in every breath, you know, cherishing every moment.
But being comfortable in that moment.
Right, and being comfortable in it and not running from it,
right,
too.
Yeah. And that's so easy to do because what, you know, I guess, you know, when you have control, you have no fear. But I guess if you were out of control and you had no fear, that would be a very monumental step, you know, within yourself. To be able to throw yourself out in any situation and know that you're going to be okay with that, know that you can adapt with whatever environment is, you know, you find yourself in.
That's what Chris always says, that he feels like he could be dropped off in the middle of Siberia.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And things would just be provided.
And things would be perfect. That's what he said.
But it's like having that soul mentality, just a conscious effort of thinking that you are going to be okay and that things will happen. It does every single time, and it's the coolest thing in the world. It's especially when it comes into play, because it's one thing when it's theory, but it's another when it's played out right in front of your face. It's just, it's almost like a trip. It's nuts.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's like, again, it's that whole mind thing. You use 10% of your mind, and you start, first of all, the fact that you can get to a point where you know there's a box, that's one thing. Then when you start looking outside the box, that's another thing. And, but yeah, that first step of seeing a box is pretty important. Because, I mean, you think about how many people, especially a lot of the older traditional people, like the baby boomers and stuff, like, they're all like, all right, dude, World War II, 1945, I'm 20 years old, all right, let's go fight for my country, that's all I know. We're pretty traditional, pretty proper, pretty, you know what I mean? It's a totally different society than it was then. And so you get these people that are so lodged in their ways. And so, like, if we were to have this conversation with a 70-year-old man, you know, it would be a lot less likely that they were to agree on a lot of the things we're talking about. And again, it just goes with the amount of consistency and how many years and years and years and years and years and they've been living their lives out. And, you know, what was passed on to them by their own family, which proved to have worked for them. But it's, I think, to a certain degree, I don't know. I guess it really has to do with the individual who you're talking about and their experience. Yeah, I guess that's a pretty good concept right there. It's I guess life's pretty much a trip. Try to understand it as best you can, but don't put too much thought into it.
Exactly, don't put too much thought into it. Yeah.
I know, it kind of seems as though I've done that. I mean, because I have, I really...
And I can't promise if I'll ever bring you back again this way. The road's the only place I feel at home. Feel at home.
All right, and that's going to conclude our evening down by the campfire, down by Oak Creek, outside Sedona, Arizona. You've been listening to the My Home is on the Road show. My name is Dave Manning. For more about the show, more about my music, I am a traveling musician. Go to davemanning.net. And I want to give a big thank you to Groundswell Media Productions for putting the website together and making sure the podcast goes out nice and smooth every week. And also want to give a shout out to Nathan, who runs Groundswell Medium Productions, because he's been having a pretty rough week. He was complaining about some of the clients that he's been having are just so hard to deal with.
If they had any balls, they'd just do like the Nazis did and just shoot me in a ditch somewhere.
All right, safe travels and have yourself a fantastic day.